Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm not going to comment on that. I'll get fined for the rest of my life if I get commented on that.
Fourth and five, the national championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Vince Young scores.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another College Chats podcast. On this pod, we're going to talk to our guest principally about Big Ten football and how he sees the season shaping up for those teams up north. But first, as you know, we're the College Chats. I'm George, and I'm joined by, well, it's just you and me again, Ollie, after Peter Burns' exclusive scoop last week that Alex had entered the transfer portal. Social media has exploded. How are you coping with all of this, Ollie?
We should rename the podcast to something like Just the Tour of Us or something along that line. I'm doing good. I'm looking forward to talking about some Big Ten football. Huge storylines in that conference this year. So I'm really excited to welcome back our guest to talk about that. There's college football on tonight. It's Big Ten football on tonight. Illinois, at Chattanooga. It's the welcoming Chattanooga to Champaign, should I say. So it's Big Ten football, it's Big 12 football, there's Sunbelt football tonight as well, all Sunbelt football there. We're just living a dream on a Thursday night. Anyway, let's get into it.
Our guest is senior college football writer for ESPN, ESPN Plus, as well as a host for college sports on Sirius XM. He's become something of a regular on chats every time we talk about Big Ten football, and we love having him on, so it's great to give a warm chats welcome to Adam Rittenberg. Hi, Adam. Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great, George and Ollie. I'm excited to talk with you guys and hope you're both enjoying the season so far. It's been a bit unpredictable, which has been fun, and I think that'll probably continue the rest of the year.
It's been an awesome start to the season. It's not been an awesome start to season. Let's start in Nebraska. They've had a very difficult time to all of this with Scott Frost. And moving on I was going to say surprisingly, but certainly so early in the season, surprisingly. Adam, just to get your thoughts on how big a job is that for a new coach? Because we'll go on and talk about who you think might be likely to come in and replace Frost. But as a starter, how big a job is it to go into Lincoln and turn that around?
It's a big job because of the repeated struggles. You know, it's been about a decade since the Nebraska's been in the Big Ten, and really most of that decade has been down. I mean, they're in their worst stretch since the 1950s, but it doesn't mean that with the right person there and some of the right ingredients around the program and the right philosophy, they can be competitive again in relatively short order. I think the most frustrating part about Scott Frost for my seat is that he was never able to transfer some of the values of Nebraska football and the teams that he played on and the teams that were playing at a high level for decades to his current roster. And I think what's even more frustrating is that those values, discipline, winning a line of scrimmage, running the football, I mean, it's like, you know, if you went down a list of the things you need to do to win in the Big Ten, it's all those things. Like the Nebraska teams of Tom Osborne and Bob Devaney, you know, they would have dominated in the Big Ten. They would, even now, they would have been a very good Big Ten team, maybe not nationally elite. And so, for whatever reason, you know, the philosophies changed, the recruiting changed, something got caught in translation. And it led to a team that wasn't very disciplined, that wouldn't win one score games, that was terrible on special teams, and they were left with no choice. You know, they couldn't even wait a few extra weeks so that the buyout would be cut in half. And they had to show him the door. You know, again, I think nationally the decision to bring Scott Frost back after last season raised some eyebrows, but it wasn't a unpopular decision in the state of Nebraska because of the affinity that people still have for him. it just got to a point with the way they started this year, especially on the defensive side, that they couldn't go forward. And, you know, that's why they are where they are. But I still think it's a job that with the right coach and the right approach, you can have success in the Big Ten.
It's interesting. The SEC coaches have a midweek press conference. And last night, most of the coaches were effusive in their praise of Clark Lee, at Vanderbilt and kind of what he's done, particularly Nick Saban, about changing the culture there. Why do you think that, given Scott Frost's background as a Cornhusker, why do you think he was unable to change the culture?
I think there were things that happened to him when he was away from Lincoln as a coach that were hard to break. I mean, let's face it, Oregon and UCF, two really good programs, but a little bit more freewheeling than maybe what they needed at Nebraska. You know, maybe in some ways easier to recruit players there and get his main points across as far as the philosophy than they were at Nebraska. I mean, you know, Nebraska plays in the Big Ten West. And in the Big Ten West, you have to play good defense. You have to be good on special teams. You can't hurt yourself because history has shown that nobody is significantly more talented than anyone else. The margins are very, very thin. And so, you know, at UCF, you know, yes, he took over a program that had fallen hard. But UCF, when all things are equal, should be the best or one of the best programs in the AAC because of its location. He was able to get that flipped very quickly. They were just better than everyone. If you look at even that 2017 season, they weren't the most disciplined team. And then Oregon, you know, their whole thing was scheme and, you know, speed and innovation. You know, that's not necessarily like what Nebraska needed. And so I think there was maybe, and understandably, this feeling like, oh, well, you know, what he did at UCF combined with who he was as a player and what Nebraska stands for, there's no way that this is going to be unsuccessful in Lincoln. But you look at a little bit more at maybe who he became as a coach away from Lincoln and what they were getting back there and could it work in this conference? It did it. And, you know, again, nothing that anyone could have predicted necessarily, at least when it happened. But kind of easier to see now, watching the repeated patterns that took place with their program.
There's been a few names, as you would imagine, touted over the last, since Scott Frost was asked to leave the building. Urban Meyer certainly being the biggest of those names, whether he's the most realistic of those names, I don't know. Bill O'Brien, another name that's being heavily touted. Adam, from what you understand, who's the kind of preferred option for the for the Nebraska program?
I think three names that, not to say that it's going to definitely be one of these three, but certainly wouldn't be surprised if it was Bill O'Brien from Penn State, Alabama, formerly of Penn State, but a guy who's been in the conference before, who I think is ready to be a head coach again after a couple of years with Nick Saban in Tuscaloosa. You know, I think Matt Campbell at Iowa State, you have to make that call, especially with them off to a good start again. You know, he's been in the area. I think he understands player development. He understands, you know, what it would take to win at a program like Nebraska, you know, because of what he did at Iowa State and getting them to a level that they haven't really enjoyed for many, many decades. And then the other one is Lance Leipold at Kansas. And, you know, he's my preferred choice. If I was making the hire, he's the guy that I would look at. And he's someone who I followed, you know, since he was basically the Nick Saban of Division III, and, you know, winning national titles almost every year at Wisconsin-Whitewater. And of those three, he's the one who has the most direct connection to Nebraska. He was there as an assistant with Frank Solich. He was also in the state at Nebraska-Omaha as a young coach and has been in the Big Ten with Barry Alvarez early in his career at Wisconsin. Barry Alvarez, obviously a Nebraska alum and former player. And so, you know, given what he's done at Kansas, which we'd all agree was the worst Power Five program and has been the worst Power Five program over the last decade, I think you have to look at what he's done this season, even last year, if they can keep it going. I think Lance Leipold merits a really long look for this Nebraska job.
Just before we move on from Nebraska, because you did make some great points there. With Lance Leipold, he is obviously, as you say, he has got those links to Nebraska. How does he avoid making the mistakes if he was to land that job? that Scott Frost made, because you talk about the job that he did and how he wasn't able to bring Nebraska football back to what had originally made it successful and what makes Big Ten football successful. When he was appointed, he was very much like, oh, we're going to bring back this, you know, this brand of football. We're going to reunify the state of Nebraska. We're going to make Nebraska proud by doing, you know, Nebraskan things on the football field. And obviously that never came to pass. So how does Lance Leipold avoid falling, or whoever takes that Nebraska job, avoids falling into that trap, that rabbit hole that Scott Frost ultimately did?
Yeah, I think it's a fair point, Ollie, because you can say it, but then how do you emphasize it? I don't know if Scott Frost necessarily emphasized everything that he needed to at a level where, because again, it didn't translate. And what do coaches always say? You get what you emphasize. I think Lance would come in understanding just the things that he would really have to hammer home in his program for them to be successful. And, you know, a guy who coached in the state of Wisconsin and saw what Wisconsin has done, saw what Iowa has done, was there at Nebraska, even though they weren't in the Big Ten at the time. I don't think it's necessarily as big of a leap. Would it definitely translate? We don't know. But I do think it would be emphasized to a level with him, with his staff, with the types of players that they would bring in, where they'd give themselves as good a chance as anyone. And I think you just look at how his teams play, how they're playing at Kansas now, how they played at Buffalo, certainly how they played at Whitewater. That's a pretty extensive resume, more so than Scott Frost. Scott Frost had a couple of years at UCF, which were great, but it was a pretty limited sample size. You know, had been at Oregon, but Oregon was already rolling with Chip Kelly and Mark Helfrich at that time. So, you know, I think going with someone who has a little more experience and a little bit longer of a track record might make some sense in this case.
Moving from a team that has been struggling and a part of ways with a coach who's been struggling to a team who are coming off the most successful season in the last few years, a coach who finally broke a lot of the curses is probably the wrong word, but a lot of the things that had dogged his tenure in Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. He's kicked off the season almost controversially with the approach to the quarterback situation, the biblical approach to the quarterback situation at Michigan, as he called it. They seem to have settled on J.J. McCarthy going forward. How's this all going to pan out for Jim Harbaugh and the Wolverines? Do you think the way that he's approached this season is setting them up for success in the Big Ten this year?
You know, I think it's fascinating because in many ways it's a departure from what Michigan has done in the past and a lot of programs like that, where you're saying to the, you know, returning starter, you know, a team captain, someone who's very respected, you're not good enough. Like we're going with a better player. And I kind of like it in a way, because I think sometimes in the Big Ten, there's too much deference to continuity. And well, this is how we've always done it. And this guy deserves to be, you know, it's like, no, you have to evaluate who your best players are. And if you want to take that next step, I think you have to go with the quarterback in today's day and age that has a higher ceiling. And in talking to a number of Big Ten coaches, I did a big quarterback roundup for ESPN Plus before the season, just what do coaches think about the quarterbacks? And the prevailing sentiment I got from those in the Big Ten is that Cade McNamara is a heck of a player and a heck of a guy, but J.J. McCarthy is simply better. And so you can certainly take issue with how they went about it. And, you know, did they really give Cade a chance to keep his job? But I think this is showing it's a pure evaluation. And J.J. McCarthy can do things that Cade McNamara can't. Now, we'll see how he does them in real games when they have much better competition than they faced so far, especially when they get into like a game at Iowa, October 1st. We can all make fun of Iowa's offense. I'm happy to do that. I do that a lot for my job. I'm happy to do it with you guys. Iowa's a salty defense, just, you know, and has been for years and years. And they take the ball away. Phil Parker's, I think, the most underrated defensive coordinator in college football. And so J.J. McCarthy, we're going to find out if he can get it done in Kinnick Stadium in a couple of weeks. And can he get it done, at Ohio Stadium at the end of the year? I mean, these are those big moments. But I think for the long term of the program that took a lot of steps last year, but you saw in the playoff was nowhere near winning a national championship, I think this moves Michigan a little bit closer, even though it's a painful decision. And it's a decision that is in some ways out of character for that program and that said coach.
Money in the mouth, reputation on the line. Can Michigan challenge for the Big Ten? Can they challenge? Because Ohio State very much looks like it's on, it feels like they're on a fast track to the Big Ten. It feels like they're on a fast track to the college football playoffs. Certainly from my opinion, I struggle to see any situation where Ohio State isn't in the college football playoff this year. But can Michigan do what they did last year and upset the apple cart in the Big Ten?
I think they can. And I don't know if they're getting enough credit. It's sort of a Big Ten version of Georgia. Like we're not talking about Michigan enough, even though they won the conference and they beat Ohio State and they have a lot of players coming back from last year's team. You know, they're not getting a lot of credit for being a real contender. Now, they haven't been tested early this season. You know, the early returns on their defense are promising, but again, you know, how are they going to do against Maryland this weekend? How are they going to do against some of the better competition in the East Division, quarterbacks and receivers and offenses that can really stress you? I think their offense is going to be pretty good with the combination of McCarthy, the receiving core, which is excellent. Eric All is a terrific tight end. Blake Corum, and when he gets healthy, Donovan Edwards is a really good 1-2 punch at running back. And so I think they're going to score points. It's just whether they'll be as difficult on the defensive side, you know, losing, in my mind, essentially 3 first-round picks. I mean, I know David Ojabo wasn't a first-round pick, but he would have been if he didn't bust his Achilles at Pro Day. So you lose, obviously, Aiden Hutchinson, you lose Daxon Hill in the back end, and you lose David Ojabo. You know, there's some good players left over, you know, Mozzie Smith, DJ Turner, but it, you know, can they maintain that level on defense? That's what's going to be interesting, because if so, I think that they can certainly compete with Ohio State again, even in Columbus.
We'll check away from the Big Ten just for a second to go into our next topic, which is a slightly disappointing topic to have to talk about, because I think when the football started, we kind of hoped we wouldn't have to talk about conference realignment again for some time, but always seems to rear its head. This week, you know, unsurprisingly, news that the Bedlam game is going to disappear from schedules, which, you know, I think certainly for us, you know, thousands of miles away, is really disappointing to see rivalry games disappear. I'm really keen to get your view, Adam, because I do get the sense you're something of a traditionalist. Is this just a constant evolution of college football? And in fact, this has been happening over the over a kind of prolonged period, or is this really the, you know, the ruination of the game as conferences and teams start to chase the money?
It's really unfortunate. I'm going to be in that state next week, a bunch, Oklahoma. And, you know, just to think about that game not taking place annually is a shame. And I hope we get to a point because of an expanded playoff, because of some different dynamics regarding scheduling, and honestly, some hurt feelings. I mean, Oklahoma State, you clearly is not thrilled with its rival, and doesn't necessarily want to figure this out right away. That we can still have these games in the future, because it's a shame that, you know, Texas and Texas A&M, I know they'll start playing again, but that's only because Texas joined the SEC. Like, it wasn't going to happen otherwise. Kansas and Missouri don't play in football. There's all these great rivalry games. You know, it's going to be something in the Big Ten, just to bring it back to that, with the league expanding to 16 teams, you know, which rivalries are going to be preserved annually, which ones, you know, maybe can go by the wayside a little bit. I mean, it's always been interesting, the sort of quadrant with Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Nebraska, you know, which of those games have to be played versus which of them don't. I mean, Minnesota, Wisconsin has to be played. Wisconsin, Iowa has to be played. I think Iowa, Minnesota probably has to be played. You know, so how do you get around some of these things? But when you have the actual realignment, and then you have the realities of, you know, non-conference games being scheduled out into the future, it does lead to, again, I'm all about the fans. It's why I've probably been the most critical member of the national media regarding SEC scheduling, not because I feel like it's unfair to the rest of the conferences. I feel like it's unfair to the fans. I mean, look at that league, guys, and we can all do it and find, you know, pairings that never happen.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh,
Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Georgia A&M never happens. Yep. Kentucky, Alabama, a game that, you know, I'd love to see a whole lot more because Kentucky's gotten so much better. Like, never happens. So why should that be celebrated? Why is that good for the fans? And it's the same thing in this case. This is a loss for the fans of college football, loss for those of us who love the sport. And you just hope that there's a way in the future that a lot of these matchups can still be played because, again, it serves the game. It serves everybody. And it's just unfortunate when they go away.
You mentioned the fans. There's going to be fans making, well, maybe not making, let's be honest, the trip from the West Coast all the way to a wet Chicago Northwestern game, maybe. Snowy Chicago Northwestern game, maybe, in late November. I'm not quite sure who's going to make that trip. But USC and UCLA are obviously heading towards the Big Ten as part of that conference expansion that you talked about. Can that move be successful for those teams and successful for the conference as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, I think it can be. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And, in football, I'm less concerned than I am with some of the other sports for those schools and the travel that their athletes are going to have to go through just to have conference games. I think there's some advantages that both USC and UCLA will have, you know, being the anchor schools on the West Coast, even though a number of Big Ten schools, you know, will recruit out there. Michigan has for years, Ohio State, you know, you look at last year, their top quarterback receiver combination were both California guys with CJ Stroud and Chris Olave, both from the San Diego area. So they're going to continue to recruit nationally. I'm curious to see how it impacts other Midwest Big Ten schools. Will they look to go to LA more for recruiting purposes because they're going to have games out there? I think for UCLA, listen, as you guys know, anytime you move a conference, there are very, very few, if any, examples that I can remember of there not being some initial growing pains. It's usually not a smooth transition. It usually gets worse before it gets better. So I think it'll be really interesting. For example, USC is already in some playoff projections in year one. I mean, this is an awful team. Like, you guys saw, they were horrible last year. They could not compete. Now they're in the playoff conversation and likely will be a top 10 team under Lincoln Riley the next 2 years. What happens in 2024? Caleb Williams presumably is no longer the quarterback. It's a new conference. How does USC handle that? History indicates that they're going to take a step back. UCLA has not done very well in its own conference for the last 25, 30 years. So how are they going to adjust to the Big Ten? So I think there's going to be an adjustment period. I do think both teams will add to the conference in a weird way. And it'll be different. But, again, I think this is just the way that things are going in college football.
Just to circle back to the realignment just for a second, Adam, despite the fact I said I didn't want to speak about it. I read with, I mean, I guess I was going to say with interest, but there are newer players coming into the TV market, and you know, Amazon's been kind of touted more recently about taking interest in some of the games, and you know, we can't shy away from the fact that there is big money kicking about, particularly as the conferences start to renegotiate and restructure their TV contracts. I'm curious, without really understanding so much about how that restructuring is going to come about, what's your view on, you know, further teams kind of moving in and out of conferences? Because it felt in that period between SEC media days and, you know, the start of the season, that it seemed like open season and virtually anybody could have jumped ship at that point. What's your feel on further changes?
I think we're going to see further changes, but I don't know if it's going to happen right away. It sounds like the current energy and focus, at least, you know, understandably with the Pac-12, but also the Big 12, is figuring out their own media rights situations and what are their own valuations. And you know, everyone at this point is going to do multiple models of valuations, who's in your league for sure, who may be in your league, who's, you know, I think even UCLA is part of some of the valuations for the Pac-12. If somehow they end up staying in the conference. And so until that's done, and then you know, the presidents and chancellors see the numbers, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of movement. It sounds like it's trending more towards the Pac-12, you're signing a grant of rights, which would essentially stop realignment for the time being, at least for a few years. Does that mean the Pac-12 won't try to pick off someone from the Mountain West? Does it mean the Big 12 won't try to pick off someone from the Mountain West? That's possible, but there's not much left to add unless the Pac-12 was really on the verge of dissolving. And I've said this, you know, before, like the Pac-12's problem, and it sounds weird to say this, is that its schools are desirable. Like, it, you know, the Big 10, you can make a case to add some Pac-12 schools. Certainly the Big 12 could do that. I don't know if there's many other conferences other than, you know, maybe the ACC, and they're locked into such a long-term grant of rights where the schools really appeal to either the Big Ten or the SEC, which are the two dominant conferences. So like if the ACC was open for business, honestly, on realignment, I think the Big Ten would look hard at a North Carolina and maybe some of the other programs in that conference, maybe Miami. Whereas, you know, because they're off the table, everyone's looking to the Pac-12, but I don't know if there's necessarily a presidential appetite in the Big Ten. I could see a commissioner appetite to continue adding. I don't know if there's a presidential or chancellor appetite. And then in the Big 12, yes, they want the Pac-12, but does the Pac-12 really want to go those schools? Do they really want to go to the Big 12? It's not exactly like that enticing at this point, all due respect to the Big 12. So I think we're knock on wood in a quiet period for now, but we'll see what happens when the Pac-12 initially and then the Big 12 gets closer to having some real evidence on their media rights.
I mean, talking about commissioners, George Kliakoff must find himself under a lot of pressure just now because brought in to, you know, grow that conference, and then, you know, not long after getting his feet under the desk, the conference starts to crack up and move away from him. So you wonder whether he's going to try and do something dramatic to try and, you know, make that conference more attractive.
Right. And one thing that George knows he was brought in for this. Now, he didn't know he was brought in to do this without USC and UCLA, but just from a general sense, you know, his media background is why they hired him. This is why a lot of commissioners are hired these days. And one thing he's been consistent about is he believes that college rights are undervalued, that you can get much more for them than they've been getting in the past. And it was something he said before the Big Ten did its television deal, and he feels even stronger about it now. And so what can he do? Can he deliver numbers that are higher than the projections? Can he bring in new partners? Amazon could be a real partner in the college football space to the table to increase the valuation. I think that this is where your talent and your innovation as a commissioner have to really shine through, because the conference is on the line, right? You know, if it's a number, it's a media rights package that doesn't excite anyone, maybe they would consider joining the Big 12, because at least the Big 12 doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So it is a lot of pressure, as you mentioned. But again, you know, this is why you were hired. You weren't hired to go watch soccer games at Washington State. You were hired to put together a media rights deal, and that's what George is doing right now.
Just got images of George Kliakoff just sat watching soccer games.
He does.
At Washington
Although
State,
George, I will
and,
not,
and just doing nothing else for the rest of his tenure. Just sat there watching Washington State every Saturday. I don't know when they play soccer.
Yeah, although he will go to Pullman, which is one of the criticisms of Larry Scott, is that Larry Scott would like fly in a private plane and refuse to stay in Pullman because it was beneath him. And George Kliakoff will actually go do these campus visits. So that's been actually a strength of his commissionership so far.
Fair play to him. Fair play to him. Let's move back to the Big Ten to finish off. We've talked about what I believe is an unstoppable Ohio State team. Michigan, you've offered a fair candidacy for their run at the championship. Is there anyone else in this conference that you think can take a run at the Big Ten championship outside of Ohio State and Michigan?
Well, I think Penn State, you know, with its win at Auburn, I know Auburn's not a great team, but the dominance that Penn State showed, it's encouraging to see what's happening there because, you know, they've been good on defense in recent years. They haven't been able to run the ball. It seems like they have some answers now with the freshman Nicholas Singleton, who I saw in the opening game back when they were still rotating their backs and trying to give other guys a chance. Seemed pretty clear right from the start that he should be the guy. And if they can improve their run offense, I mean, I saw them play guys at Ohio State last year. And Sean Clifford, you know, people have their opinions and some Penn State fans have washed their hands of Sean Clifford and they're ready for Drew Aller. But Sean Clifford, you know, played his butt off in that game and had almost no help around him to try to beat one of the best teams in the country on the road. And if he can have some help, at running back, at receiver, at tight end with a better offensive line, and then an aggressive defense under Manny Diaz. I think this is an interesting team to kind of project out the next few weeks. Now they have to go to Michigan on October 15th. That's going to be a huge game. The winner of that game is really going to have an inside track potentially on challenging Ohio State. And if that winner is Penn State, you know, they get the Buckeyes coming in at the end of the month when that's a tough place to play when that place is, you know, riled up, and they certainly would be for Ohio State. So Penn State to me is that third team. You know, Michigan State, unfortunately, I think I see some of the same issues that cropped up last year with them on from a defensive standpoint. You know, Mel Tucker, you know, not holding back criticism of himself after that game against Washington, but they are just not where they need to be defensively from a talent standpoint and a depth standpoint. And they're probably not as good offensively, although Peyton Thorne is one of the more underrated quarterbacks, I think, in the country. So to me, it's Penn State. Maybe Minnesota, but that's probably it as far as challenging Ohio State and Michigan.
Yeah, I think I've just finished doing the college football bowl projections this week. And I think when you look at the Big Ten, for me, it is at Ohio State and then Michigan, then Penn State. And seeing, like you mentioned, Nicholas Singleton and running behind guys like Olu Fashanu and the receivers, you know, we brought in Mitchell Tinsley from Western Kentucky, Parker Washington, great player. The tight ends are underrated. There's not a Pat Fry move, for example, of years gone by, but Brenton Strange, for example, that it is a team that is packed with talent. But it does feel very much, like we said before, like it could be Ohio State in the college football playoff. If they were to take on Georgia today, if the college football playoff was today, the national championship was today, do you think Ohio State and Georgia, do you think the Buckeyes could come out and emerge as a national champion?
It would be awfully tough because Georgia, you know, has that reference point of winning a national championship, and Georgia seemingly has improved on offense and not taken much of a step back, if any, on defense. You know, I know Kirby Smart has sort of downplayed some of these quotes that other coaches were giving about their team, noting that, hey, we lost a lot of really good players, and he's right, but they have a lot of really good players left over even on that defense. And so I think for Ohio State, you know, they're going to have to continue to evolve defensively. We know their offense is capable of scoring a lot of points, even against a team like Georgia. But I think their defense under Jim Knowles, which I love to hire, is not quite where it needs to be to win a national championship. So, you know, improving on the edges. Denzel Burke has had a bit of a hard start at cornerback. Can he get to that level that they expect him to be as far as an elite guy defending the pass? So I don't think they can beat Georgia right now. I think they could beat Georgia or at least compete better with Georgia in a couple of months if they can stay healthy and keep improving on defense.
Just super quick before we let you go, Adam, a story that keeps on kind of raising its head over the last couple of weeks is that a bit of disgruntlement at Wisconsin over Paul Christ and people saying that he's maybe starting to overstay his welcome. And I'm so far removed from that program, but do you get a sense that there is a kind of growing momentum that Wisconsin's not moving in the right direction? How under pressure does Paul find himself under?
Yeah, I wouldn't put him in the hot seat category, but you ask about moving forward. It almost feels like they're not moving. They're very stagnant. And that's never a good place to be. It's a hard place for a coach to live in that spot for very long without facing some significant pressure. And the dynamic there that's interesting, there's a couple of them, but the one that we talked about Nebraska earlier, another name that's certainly come up for Nebraska is Jim Leonard, the Wisconsin defensive coordinator. And you know, there's certainly been a desire among Wisconsin fans to have Leonard succeed Paul Christ and be the guy at Wisconsin one day. I think that would be Leonard's preference. You know, he turned down the Green Bay Packers to remain Wisconsin's defensive coordinator. And certainly the place means everything to him as a former player there. And so there's that. You know, Chris McIntosh is their athletic director. He is a former Wisconsin player. He's known Paul Christ forever. I don't see him as someone who wants to move on from Paul Christ unless something is in a really urgent place. But this is an important season, guys. You know, since the Big Ten started its championship game back in 2011, this has been the longest drought Wisconsin has gone without making that game. So if they go another year without making that game and say lose to Minnesota again, which has been an issue here a little bit lately for them after dominating that series, that's going to create some angst. I don't think it's necessarily going to mean a change this year, but it means it's a situation to watch going forward, even though, you know, Paul certainly had a lot of success there, but the combination of offense not really taking off under Graham Mertz, them not winning the West Division, those things can add up very quickly, especially when you have a guy behind you in Jim Leonard who looks like the long-term answer there. You certainly don't want to let him get away.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, Adam, we could talk to you all afternoon or all night where we are, but we do really appreciate you taking the time out to chat to us. Tell us, to the extent you can, what you've got working on just now that our listeners can watch out for over the next couple of weeks.
Sure. So next week I'll have a piece on Kentucky and also on the other so-called basketball schools and what they can do to sort of follow Kentucky's lead. It's just been amazing what Mark Stoops has been able to do there. And I spent some time this summer in Lexington talking to him and some others about what's gone into their success and the patience of building a program over the course of a decade to the point where it is right now. So, you know, what can Indiana learn from that? What can Arizona learn from that? What can Kansas, who's off to a great start, learn from that? So that's what I'll be having next week. And then certainly looking at transfers and also players that are kind of getting on the draft boards a little bit, that are rising up the draft boards with their play through the first half of the season.
That'll be awesome to read. It is interesting to see the competitive tensions at Kentucky with the successful football team versus the basketball team. I'm sure that's all kind of played itself out now, but interesting to see how the dominance can be moved about in a program. So yeah, be really interesting to read that. Thank you, Adam. That's all from us. If you're a regular listener, you know we have awesome guests like Adam regularly, so please subscribe, rate and review, and we'll be your friends for life. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Our Twitter account is at College Chaps, so please give us a follow. Thanks again to Adam and Ollie for their brilliant input. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and well, and catch you all next time.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.